Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
What are the Long Box Guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box Guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless at taking over the world. Yes!
Hey, everybody, welcome to this week's episode of the Long Box Guys. With me, as always, are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid. Tommy, how you doing over there, buddy?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing, Tommy?
I'm doing great. Josh, how you doing there, pal?
I'm doing pretty good, thanks.
Oh, you know, I'm sorry. Tommy, I forgot to ask you what you're drinking over there.
I'm drinking some Glenmorangie Scotch. What are you drinking, Tommy? Your glass of funny. Oh, it looks empty. Well,
it is almost empty. I might have to get it refilled. This is a Captain's Bunk, which is rum, coconut water, orange juice, and seltzer water. It's quickly becoming my favorite drink. I really like it. Plus, I am hydrated as hell on this thing. If anyone has a little trouble, I don't like plain water, and this gets a lot of good liquid in you. Speaking of good liquid, Josh, what are you drinking over there, pal?
I made a treehouse run this week, so I've got a little tornado pale ale from them. It's delicious.
Tornado pale ale, that does sound good. Mikey, sweet Mikey, what are you drinking there, pal?
I am drinking Heineken this week because Costco keeps on selling it really cheap. It's less than a dollar a bottle. Heineken. Wow. When you want cheap beer from Costco, Heineken.
Yeah. How taking cheap a golden was it? Anniversary and lion's head path to drinking. That's admirable, Mike.
It is $25 for a 28-pack of Heineken at my local Costco.
Wow.
And it seems weird that they decided it was going to be a 28-pack, but whatever.
You'll take that extra four beers, yeah, and you'll run with it. Probably just packed up nice in the box.
Or maybe they just shorted me two beers. I'm not sure how it worked.
Well, did you pay a guy in the parking lot to go and buy your beers because you look too young? Because that's how I usually got shorted two beers.
Yeah.
But it was usually from a six-pack. Yeah. I didn't know six-packs came six beers. Until I was 21, I thought a six-pack was four beers, because the guy running in for you always got two. I'm sorry, I'm a little unfocused. Instead of being unfocused, we're going to focus in like a laser beam and talk about lasers, the best laser weapons in all of Marvel, DC, or... Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry, we're not going to talk about that.
We're not talking about lasers.
I thought we were going to talk about that. Instead, we're talking about enemies of the Incredible Hulk, which there are many. A lot of the enemies of the Hulk. I mean, there's a whole team. The Hulk
teams.
Buster. Yeah.
Multiple teams.
Multiple teams. Are there multiple teams of Hulk Busters? I guess there are. I even remember my favorite
one team
Hulk
specifically of Hulk Busters, ironically or not ironically, called the Hulk Busters. But there are definitely teams who have always hunted the Hulk over the years.
That's true. I mean, his own teams, usually. I mean, the Avengers... About a third of their early adventures were, oh shit, Hulk is on a rampage again. And the same exact thing with the Defenders. I'm not really sure if we can call them enemies of the Hulk, though. So we're going to go over some of the classic enemies, some of the first enemies. The Hulk, of course, was a Marvel creation that played upon our fears of radiation and the new atomic age. So a lot of his enemies were also based on atomic radiation and the atomic age. And we'll talk a little bit about that. And what it means to, have these villains that are part of our, group psyche. But Tommy, why don't you give us your favorite Hulk villain?
General, I will keep anyone from dating my daughter Ross.
General Cockblock.
That's right. He will divert all the military's resources to prevent his daughter from dating somebody.
Mike, that tickled you in a good way.
I'm just imagining the Hulk from the Ultimate Universe, who was the scariest fucking imaginable Hulk you've ever seen, because he was scaling the side of a building, going, "Oh, Betty, how corny." Scariest fucking line I've ever heard in a comic book.
Or in a prison. Two places you don't want to hear that. So why do you like General Thunderbolt Ross so much there, Tommy?
Well, I just think he's one of the best Hulk villains because, I mean, he is the reason that the Hulk just sort of wanders around a lot in a lot of the comics because he's always on the run from the military from General Ross. So he always just wants to get away. He just wants a little peace and quiet.
And you know, General Ross also later becomes the Red Hulk.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Who is causing all the commotion that the Hulk wants to get away from? General Ross.
I think that's true in a lot of the early ones, yeah. Until he gets, like, real villains to fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ross is a real villain.
And Ross does represent the industrial military complex from the 1960s. So there was a great fear in that of the military and what it was doing back then. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. It represents corruption in government also in a way because, I mean, he's totally off on his own a lot of times, not asking for any sort of permission or, you know,
permission. Any knowledge he's a general.
Yeah.
You see, he's not getting any authority to run a lot of these operations. He's just going off on his own, you know, often a lot of times out of his depth. Causing tons of damage to citizens and the public. Whereas the Hulk would have just been, you know, fine. He would have been left on his own, turned into Bruce Banner, and walked off into the sunset if it wasn't for General Ross antagonizing him.
Well, I don't think you should die on that hill, but okay.
So my pick... for my favorite Hulk villain is going to be actually a Thor villain, Absorbing Man, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Absorbing Man is a scary bad guy when it comes to the Hulk because he can absorb Hulk's gamma radiation and steal the Hulk of his strength and give it to himself. So Crusher Creel, if he was smarter, would be really fucking deadly, especially when he goes up against the Hulk. And at one point in a Hulk, it was either Volume 2 or Volume 3, there's a whole series where Crusher Creel is in a prison and is able to project his consciousness out. And that makes him even more scary, and he gets more into the horror elements that I think good Hulk stories have. What about you, Josh?
I think one of my favorites, both from a sort of the local mythological standpoint, and because his story arc also helped introduce the Wolverine to me personally is Wendigo. So Wendigo is not a specific person. The villain Wendigo has been several characters over the years, and the American Indian myth is that if you are stuck in the wilderness and you resort to eating human flesh, sometimes you are possessed by the spirit of the Wendigo to become this giant hulking mythological creature. And so Wendigo and Hulk have fought on many occasions, but in the original I think it was Hulkish like 184 185, and that was one of the real first introductions of Wolverine as a character as well. So it always just sticks in my mind that those three characters are sort of intertwined in their in how I view comics from that time, and I just love it. I just love the interplay between the three characters, and that it was sort of the hunt of the hunt of the hunter, and how eventually we get to, if you flash forward and you watch the what I consider the ultimate fight between Hulk and Wolverine in Hulk 340. It's sort of just this sort of lead up, because both actually happen to take place, if you take a good look at the comics, it's the same highway in Canada. I don't know why. Oof. But those two things happen on like the same stretch of road in Canada. So love it.
That was a great comic book. Hard to find, of course, expensive now. The three-way combat that's going on are some of the best drawn and best written, just because the action just seems so intense. They take a long time, you know, putting in these good fight scenes in that one.
Yeah, and they really showed Wolverine as a hunter then, which I really liked. And they get away from that a lot at certain points in his arc, but that's how I always think of him.
Alrighty. Mikey, you got one for me?
Yeah. If you're going to talk about the Hulk's worst enemy, I'd say it's going to be... One of them is definitely the Maestro, which is actually the Hulk from the future. His own personal demons catch up to him in... what was it called? The Future Imperfect? That was written by Peter David. That features the Maestro. It shows what a Hulk whose brain has been ravaged by radiation for so long and loses the part of his brain that would provoke any kind of empathy for any other human being just kind of dies out. And that's what we're left with the Maestro. The Maestro has deformed children who are, you know, basically a group of hillbilly Hulks is the best way to describe them, but scary as hell because they're all cannibals and they like to eat people. So, I think Maestro, if you're going to list the Hulk's villains, it's the future villain. It's what Hulk is afraid he's going to become, and that's the Maestro.
That's a good one. I tend towards the leader. I like the leader. He's one of the first villains I remember the Hulk fighting. He's like the Hulk in as much as he's green. But instead of affecting his strength, it affected his intelligence when he was bombarded with gamma radiation. His head is extremely elongated, bigger in some comics, much bigger in others. And he has super intelligence, which he uses to try to trap the Hulk, sometimes trying to enslave the Hulk to be part of the Gamma Army that he wants to create, sometimes just trying to get the Hulk so he can put his brain in the Hulk's body. That story arc has played out a couple of times. Other times he's actually worked with the military to create a Hulkbuster unit. His last big one was the Riot Squad, which has some very strange villains in them, including Jailbait, who could project psychic force field, but was also irradiated and green-skinned, and it caused her to take on a very voluptuous look, even though she was very young. Not the favorite story arc of mine, because it's a little questionable, but it was kind of a fun team. Jailbait is later killed, but I like all the Hulkbuster iterations and units. There's been four or five different teams that have called themselves the Hulkbusters, including one in the Ultimates universe, one that was just for S.H.I.E.L.D., one that the leader had, and Thunderbolt Ross had his own Hulkbusters, which featured the Hulkbuster armor and a couple other ones. My favorite on that one was, as long as I'm still talking about the Hulkbusters, there was an Aikido master who was this older Asian lady, and they just called her Aikido because no one can name an Asian martial arts master better than Marvel. Good job, Marvel. And she would use his strength against him. So the Hulk would rush at Aikido, and Aikido would, like, it'll take all my energy to move his might in my direction. And she'd flip him. And Hulk was getting really pissed. Until he figured out that if he punched the ground hard enough, Aikido couldn't really hurt him as much as he could just make her legs shatter off from under her. So he did find a way to defeat Aikido, but it took him a couple tries. I like that. Tom, you got another one for me?
Tony Stark.
As a villain. All right, well, the three amigos there really did fuck up the Hulk for a long time, so.
I mean, Tony Stark claims to be Bruce Banner's friend, yet he does not at any point put all of his resources into helping Bruce Banner solve his Hulk problem. Instead, he goes on and creates several iterations of Hulkbuster armor instead. Whenever Iron Man comes across the Hulk, usually it ends in a fight. It doesn't end well when he's in the wild, comes across the Hulk. A lot of times it ends in a fight. So I have to say Tony Stark. Because even though they were on the Avengers together, they weren't all that friendly.
I think if you're going to throw Tony Stark in, you should probably talk about what the Illuminati did to him. The Illuminati is Tony Stark, Doctor Strange, Reed Richards, and Black Bolt in this iteration, and they realize that Hulk is so dangerous for Earth, and they haven't been able to figure out a cure, so they literally launch him into space to get rid of him, which causes a whole several-year storyline, and when the Hulk comes back to Earth, he is pissed.
Yeah. He's not so much interested in finding his favorite calzone?
He is not. The storyline when he returns to Earth is called World War Hulk. If you haven't checked that out, you really should, because Hulk decimates just about the entire Marvel universe. Anybody who comes up against him, he smashes.
Yeah, I have a problem with the Illuminati. Did you guys notice there's someone very conspicuous by his absence? And that would be the scientist supreme of Earth?
Hank Pym?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, it's weird. They've got the Sorcerer Supreme, but they don't have the Scientist Supreme.
Just Supreme, yeah.
Tough. According to Loki, this guy should have been part of your clubhouse, guys. I'm just saying, you missed an easy one. Josh, who you got next?
Did we already say Abomination?
No
one's got an Abomination yet.
Abomination, I think, is really that's the super prototypical, right? The counter to the counter. You've got a Emil Blonsky, what is he, Yugoslavian spy? Russian spy? I can't remember.
I think he's Russian.
He's a Russian spy. He decides that to counteract the Hulk, since apparently Hulk lives in the United States and regularly ravages its cities, that he wanted to also do that, which seems to make a ton of sense.
It's the Cold War. So, you've got a rampaging monster in your country? Well, we need a rampaging monster, too.
Show you.
You've got
a triple dose of rampaging monsters. So the Abomination, basically, he's like three times as strong as Rest Hulk. So we all know Hulk gets stronger as he gets madder. Abomination, not so lucky. He is stronger than the Hulk at the start. He has a similar... lapse in judgment and the tendency to go into blind rages, and so but he's basically just the counterpoint to the Hulk in the actual Cold War, and he's just a little more reptilian and a little less refined than ye olde Hulk, but he shows up a lot. I think I'm not sure if there's any other sort of counterpoint, just super strong rage, rage machine that comes up against the Hulk as often as the Abomination.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you on that one. I think the Abomination is the guy that, I most in my head see the Hulk fighting when I'm like, what was the Hulk fighting this week? Abomination, maybe. It's not Tim Roth.
All the time.
Yeah.
And he's
Roth is a good villain.
He's one of your favorite tropes, the villain that has the exact same powers as the hero. You love that, Josh.
I love that, yeah. I mean, that's every Marvel movie ever, so it's fine. It's totally fine.
So I think we should also go back to the horror element that is the Hulk. And recently, in the last several years, they have really played up on that. The Hulk's worst enemy in the current series, the Immortal Hulk, is death itself. Because Bruce Banner has been trying to kill himself and realizes that he can't because the Hulk is immortal. and it has taken on a whole new horror theme. If you guys like horror comics, I am going to suggest going checking out The Immortal Hulk. It is constantly building on the horror theme every episode, and it's amazing all the ways Bruce Banner has been trying to kill himself to just get rid of the burden of the Hulk himself. And the Hulk is really the villain of the story to Bruce Banner.
Yeah, I guess he would be.
And it's got Sasquatch in it, so there you go. A little Alpha Flight love for you, LT.
That's right.
Speaking of which, I got a couple Alpha Flight crossover comic books to send your way, buddy. Some two-in-ones for you. Just came in the mail today. But let me bring it over to my next one, which would be The Blob. You might think The Blob is kind of a funny villain for the Hulk, but The Blob and the Hulk fight kind of a lot. And it's because The Blob thinks of himself and even calls himself the immovable object. Nothing moves the Blob. It's even part of his catchphrase in a video game.
It's true.
The reason the Blob can't be moved is he controls his own density, but he also creates a link with the Earth when he's standing on it. So if you're actually going to move the Blob, you have to move the entire planet beneath him, which seems pretty daunting. But the Hulk did it once. I just pulled up the image. You see Frank Dukes being lifted up, and you see the Earth beneath his feet also coming up. The Hulk picked up the Blob, even when the Blob was connected to the Earth, at least one time that I know of. And it's a pretty cool image.
It is a cool image.
It is. It is. It's a cool idea when you think about it. You know, of course, there is going to be a hole on the other side of the Earth because the liquid core magma isn't exactly going to allow that magma. Isn't going to pull that up. But it's a really cool thought when you're thinking, like, he's pulling up all of that weight, including the mutant power to increase his density. So already raised hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of tons. But then you have that added weight of the Earth beneath him, all the way to, presumably, the center of the Earth, or at least to the part of the Earth that's liquid. So I always thought that was a pretty cool one.
I have a trivia question for you.
Ooh, is this going to be an Alex fact also?
It's going to be a fun Alex fact. What is the name of the journalist who is hunting down the Incredible Hulk in the TV show?
Okay, hands up. Yeah. It's,
Martin Post. No, it wasn't Martin Post.
No, that's me hunting like somebody
McNeil
else.
McNeil or
down.
Something like that. Something with
him. McNeil, you got it, you got it. Keep going.
You're close. No,
it's not, you're close.
It's Mick something.
McNally?
No.
Yeah, Rand McNally was...
Rand McNally. I'm going to hunt you to the ends of the Earth, and I'll find you on the ends of the Earth.
Was it McNash?
I'm Rand McNally.
McGee. Jack McGee.
Like
Trust me, Jack Mr. McGee. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. And that leads me to the fun Alex fact. In the Immortal Hulk, he is being trailed by a reporter named Jackie McGee. It's a female this time. What was the Incredible Hulk's alter ego in the TV show? It wasn't Bruce Banner.
David Banner.
Yeah,
which is weird because wasn't that like Thor's secret identity for a while? Dr. David Banner or something? Yeah, like a weird name too.
I think they changed it from Bruce because they didn't like the alliteration. And at the time, Batman was around and he was Bruce Wayne, so they wanted to change the first name.
Makes total sense.
About my best friend. Oh, wait, no, sorry. Wrong Bill Bixby show.
That's a wrong Bill Bixby show. That would be Eddie's father. The courtship, mind you, of Eddie's father. What was the name of the housekeeper?
I have no idea.
I can't remember it.
Japanese stereotype?
I was going to say Mrs. Lin, but...
Probably. Now, Tommy, I really thought you were going to go with the Crimson Dynamo, who fought the Hulk on multiple occasions, because I know you like the Crimson Dynamo. How come that didn't enter your wheelhouse?
Because, honestly, I think Iron Man fought him more.
All right.
I think Tony Stark had more of an itch to scratch with the Hulk than Crimson Dynamo ever did. I think Crimson Dynamo, only time that he fought the Hulk, it was for his own personal gain. I don't think he had a motive behind it.
Yeah, the Armor Wars series with Dynamo and Iron Man, all that stuff. I love that. One of the crossovers I did enjoy back in the day.
Yeah, that was a good one. Didn't like some of the artwork in some of them, but I did like the story. So, Tom, you got another Hulk enemy for us?
No, I mean, Mike already got his alter ego Bruce Banner, which I think is probably the biggest enemy of the Hulk, because he's been gunning for the Hulk since day one.
Yeah. No one's tried to kill the Hulk more than Bruce Banner, that's true.
What about Doc Samson?
That's a fun one, because Doc Samson was usually trying to cure the Hulk.
Right.
Except when Doc Samson went evil. So Doc Samson was tirelessly always trying to save the Hulk. But when he was evil, he was trying to kill the Hulk.
Yeah, he's had a mixed relationship with Bruce Banner and the Hulk.
Yeah.
He has. Also in Hulk 340 for the Ultimate Showdown, so.
Dun, dun, dun.
Who was he?
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, it's Doc Samson catching up with the Hulk and then Wolverine from Alpha Flight, and then the big showdown, and the big claws on the front cover with the Hulk's reflection. And it's still one of my favorite comic books of all time. Single issues of all time. Yeah.
I remember a Marvel 2-in-1 where it was the Thing, and he was in a boxing outfit, and they had Hulk, Sasquatch, Doc Samson, like all the big heavy hitters were all on this one cover where it was supposed to be a big boxing match between the most powerful heroes in the Marvel Universe. It was not. The cover lied.
Yeah.
Damn it, cover.
That's disappointing. But, you know, I would have hoped that the Thing and the Hulk actually had a few more showdowns over the year. And it's surprising. They did, but not as many as you would have thought, with being the big fronted characters for just raw super strength and damage resistance as they were, right?
Yeah, I think it's because every time they met, the Thing ended up getting his ass handed to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Hulk and the Thing aren't exactly in the same league.
Now, you're talking monstrous versus unearthly, right? Yeah. A 75 versus 100.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember when Thing went from flat to spiky, and I was hoping he was going to get a little more, you know, get a few more swings in when he saw the Hulk, but you never really saw it. And I think Thing should have been. I think he needed to be ratcheted up a notch over the years. He deserved it. I mean, we need a few more super strong Jews out there represented as golems. I mean, if you can't be a, you know, I need a little help out here. You know, I need a little backup. So.
Well, you got Super Sabra, Kitty Pryde. There's not a lot.
There's not a lot.
Barry Horowitz.
Not a lot. Yeah, Barry Horowitz. I got Barry trying to help the Thing out in the ring. It's embarrassing sometimes, but you know, we do what we can. You know, we just get out there and we swing away.
Yeah. I guess does anyone else have someone they have to get off their chest for a Hulk villain? I mean, there's a bunch more, of course, that we're not talking about. But I think we hit some of the big ones.
I was trying to think of, and I couldn't. And now I can't really picture it in my mind. I loved when he was Mr. Fix-It, honestly. When he was less powerful, but he was sort of like rolling that mafia vibe and sort of like controlling the underworld. I really kind of liked the Mr. Fix-It era. It was entertaining. A lot of it was actually pretty well written. But I honestly can't remember. I mean, I think the foil to Mr. Fix-It was like organized crime or the other families, and you never really got a sense that there was a super powerful backing to sort of counteract him, or I just can't remember it. But I did like I do remember really enjoying that era for the Hulk. I like the idea that he, you know, was diminished but still intelligent, but he was also sort of tainted by the rage that sort of contained him as a being. So I really liked it.
Yeah, I like that too. I remember during that phase, the only villain I remember coming across was Tombstone, and he wasn't really in the same league.
Yeah, that's not,
for
yeah.
a fist fight. Even depowered, Tombstone and him weren't really on equal footing. But Tombstone had a couple of henchmen that were super strong, Brickhouse and Hammerhead, which once again, not exactly in the Hulk's league, not even the depowered right. one, but a couple of guys like that. Oh, you know what? I think he might have those four guys, I think he might have the enforcers with him.
Yeah.
Once again, not exactly the same league.
but plenty of them.
Guy with a rope. Guy with a yeah. rope.
Big guy. He had a rope. There was a guy with a rope.
There was one guy who had a rope.
Not forget about the gamma radiated dogs. What fucking movie was that? Was that the Eric Bana one, or was that the Edward Norton?
I've already mentioned that one. That was Tim Roth as the bad guy.
No.
And it was the worst bad guy. Yeah, Tim Roth was the bad guy.
Nope. No, it was not Tim Roth as the bad guy. That was like, was it Busey, or the other guy who looks exactly like Busey?
Gary Busey was...
he was the villain when there was the dogs. Who was Nick
Nolte.
Right? Nick Nolte, thank you. I mean, they're basically the same person, whatever.
Well, I'm going to argue with that, and I'll die.
No, you don't get to argue that. They're basically the same goddamn person.
Let's just say film has not been kind to the Hulk. His own solo movies as a...
Yeah, they're terrible, yeah. Although, I have to say, when it was, what's his name? The young
Mark
guy.
Ruffalo?
No, the other one.
Eric Bana?
Nope, the other one.
Nope. You're talking about the guy from American History X.
Yes.
Ed Norton?
What's his name?
Ed Norton.
The beginning of the Ed Norton one, where he was hiding out before he actually became the Hulk, was a promising movie. And then they screwed the rest of that movie up.
Yeah. I'll agree with that.
But like the first like 18 minutes, I was like, this is going to be a good movie. And then that's when I realized
I
was completely wrong.
They misled you.
The problem with having Ed Norton as Bruce Banner is that Ed Norton always looks really pissed off to me. That might just be all carryover from American History X.
American History X, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and he always looks super pissed off.
He doesn't look pissed off in the score.
I don't know what that is.
It was a movie I just with Robert De Niro. It was very good. It was a heist movie.
Yeah, that was a good movie. I will say Ed Norton was a comic book fan and really liked The Hulk.
And I think they did a good rendition of him as the not Hulk, and then as soon as they put the effects in and started everything up in that movie, it was terrible. Sorry, Hulk.
Yeah, and
that was the one with
elephant by its trunk.
Yeah, Tim Roth was the Abomination in that movie.
Is that the Leonardo one?
Eventually.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah, but he didn't become the Abomination until way too late in the movie. Like, way too late. He was Tim Roth way too long in that movie. Like, Tim, I get it. You want the screen credits. And that'll bring us... and that's if anyone else has a great Hulk film they want to add, just toss it out there on our Patreon or Twitter page. You can always check out our Twitter at TheLogBoxGuys on Twitter. And you can check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/TheLogBoxGuys for just $1 a month. You, too, can get an extra podcast every week where we talk about mostly what we do during the week that's geeky and nerdy that doesn't have to do with comic books nearly as much.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
In the back of the long box, I have Retropunk by Matthew Ridier, James Sirdes, and Homar Soriano. It was released back in 2014 by AAM Marcosia Publishing. This is a very sort of almost anime-type book. It features two bounty hunters. One has some cat-like appendages, and the other one's a robot that's her partner. And they're sort of low-rent bounty hunters. They live really almost in a slum. And they start out by doing a job, and then they're immediately approached by this superstar, megastar who's built by a company, sort of like any sort of teen sensation would be today. And this teen wants to get out of her contract and just live a normal life. And they're just supposed to protect her for the time being while she can sort of get out. And of course, the company is looking for her because she's a cash cow for them. And it's all about them trying to hide this kid and keep her from being taken by these corporate execs. And it's a good story, and it has some really great art, especially if you are the type of person that kind of likes anime style of art. I highly recommend it.
Highly recommend it. I want to take a quick second to do a comic book that I just got in the mail today. Tommy, this is the reason that you're getting some terrific comic books from the Marvel and 2-in-1 series that have Alpha Flight in it. I got Marvel 2-in-1 number 86 featuring The Thing and Sandman. Now, I hardly ever get to talk about a comic book where there's no fight scene. If you guys remember this comic book, it's The Thing and the Sandman in a bar, and The Thing is saying it's Miller time. The Thing finds out that the Sandman is at a bar, and he goes down to capture him. And the Sandman says, "I'm not looking for trouble. I don't even want to fight. I'm just going to come along peacefully." And Ben pulls up a seat, buys him a beer, and they just start talking. The Sandman tells his entire origin story in this comic book. Some of it is in flashbacks and references to other comic books, so this storyline has been told already, but he fleshes it out way better. And you can start feeling this catharsis for the character of Marco. He is someone who is trying to do better and is trying to get better. Once again, there's no fight in this entire comic book, well, at least the first half of the comic book. It just takes place in this bar. Marco tells the Thing his story of his origin. There's violence in the past, and there's these fight scenes that happen when Marco is a low-level thug and when he becomes a Sandman that he's telling in flashbacks. But the Thing gets up and leaves and says, "You know what, kid? I'm rooting for you. This might be your time, and I'm not taking you in." And he leaves him to try and take that hero's journey. There is a funny backstory. There is a secondary story in that comic book where the Impossible Man is just bugging Ben Grimm. It's worth a read. No real fight scene in that except, you know, trying to keep the Impossible Man from turning the world into ice cream or whatever the fuck he's trying to do that week. Mikey, do you got anything fun in the front of the long box?
Yes. At the front of the long box, I have Rising Stars by J. Michael Straczynski, the writer and creator of Babylon 5. Does this comic book for Top Cow. The entire series is available on Comixology Unlimited for those of you who have it. It is an interesting read, but it is not a classic work of fiction. I think Babylon 5 is a much better series. The premise of it is a burst of radiation happens over a town in Illinois, and all the children, 113 of them who are in utero, are all experience a energy surge and are imbued with superpowers. The problem with the series is none of the characters are really developed very well. They're all just kind of cookie cutter personalities that they put out there, and the artwork by I can't tell the difference between a lot of the characters. This is 1990s kind of Top Cow. Everybody's got big boobs and big muscles and long hair. And except for the guy who plays the cop and the guy who plays the religious cult leader, everybody else looks the exact same. Like, well, they have two characters, one named Raven Shadow and another one named John. And whenever they're talking to each other in the same scene, I don't know who the fuck is who. Because they look exactly the same. Every female in there can't button up her blouse all the way. It is apparently just not possible in that universe. And they don't make any skirts that go below the top of the thigh. It's just, yeah, it's there's a lot of problems with it.
I blame Nagel for a lot of that terrible 90s stuff.
So yeah. If I remember correctly, I think they did try to, I think he did try to tackle some of the things that were covered in Civil War, like government conscription of the superheroes, because I believe they were kind of forced into doing some things. So I think he did try to do some interesting things with the series, but from years ago reading it, I think you're right. I don't think it really hit on anything in particular. I think it was just kind of mediocre across the board.
Yeah, the only thing I thought was interesting is they have a character named Flag, who is getting sued by Howard Chaykin, saying you can't use that name for your superhero because I own it. So I thought that was funny. And a great nod to...
That is fun.
Yeah. And that's about it. So I've saved you the trouble of reading it. I told you all the best parts. Yeah, that's right. The spoiler's back.
Spoiler.
The spoiler's back, baby. Don't read this comic book.
Spoiler. Do have a tangent. And just like our president today, who mentioned that the epidemic of influenza in 1918 might have been the cause of the end of World War II, I also like alternative histories. So, what is your favorite, like, alternate history storylines? Or it could be, you know, comics. Or I think I broke out to you. I think, you know, whether it be books or movies or comics, what's your favorite sort of alternate history fiction?
Back in the day, I really liked the To Rule in Hell series. You guys remember that?
Yeah.
To Rule in Hell or To Reign in Hell?
Well, To Reign in Hell was just a single book.
Right.
By Stephen Brust.
Yeah, is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking about To Rule in Hell?
I think so.
I'm not sure what To Rule in Hell is.
I think the overall arc was called To Rule in Hell. It was like five books by Brust.
To Reign in Hell is a single book as to the fall of Lucifer from heaven, and he only wrote one book. And it wasn't really a history so much it was a fantasy book about why Lucifer was kicked out of heaven.
The one I'm thinking about is it's really good. Yeah, I'll look it up in a second, but here's the basics. Almost everyone ends up going to hell because getting into heaven's really hard. There's multiple rulers in hell because there's always like a civil war going on, and there's all these famous people down there. Now, it was written much like Wild Cards. There was...
Yes, that's not Brust. I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
But
You're right. I think maybe Brust did one story. Because it was an anthology with tons and tons and tons of writers. It was real good.
I'm trying to think. I
know what you're talking about. I've read that series also, but I just don't remember what it's called. But that's not an alternate history.
Well, there's a lot of alternate history in it.
Oh. See,
because all these famous people kind of go down to hell. Hitler and I think...
But there's no current history of hell in our lexicon. That's the difference, right?
So for TV shows,
I still liked it.
For TV shows, I really like the first season of The Man in the High Castle.
The Man in the High Castle is definitely a fantastic sort of spin on everything that happens.
And for role-playing games, I really loved Twilight 2000, but mainly because I was playing it in the army with a bunch of army guys, and you know the whole concept is World War III happens, and you're stuck behind Soviet lines, and you're trying to get out of the Warsaw Pact region.
That was like the role master of modern military games. That game did not go easy on the charts and rules, but I really did enjoy it.
Oh yeah, you had to have a bunch of backup characters because there's a high body count.
Yeah, it was a high body count game.
Yeah, that was
a grinder.
I remember
doing that. Like, that was a grinder game. I totally forgot about that. Twilight 2000, Jesus. And first of all, it was a futuristic game about the apocalypse in the year 2000. But
only
other
off
than
by
that,
20 years.
Only barely off by a decade. I mean, they were as bad hackers as they fucking could get at this point. But wow, yeah. Wow, I don't remember. Yeah. I remember seeing they actually did some serious research on Russian military vehicles for that game. Like, they statted everything out.
And so while we were playing it, we would show flashcards of to practice figuring out, you know, what vehicle's what, and rather than the referee telling us what it was, he would show us the flashcard, and you'd be like, "Oh, that's Soviet."
Definitely Soviet.
That's Western Germany. Yeah, we're good with that. We don't have to attack that vehicle.
Yeah, they did a good job. Like those guys. Yeah, they dug in and did the research. Man, that was a good game.
Mikey, what's the feature characteristics on the T-21 tank?
Headlights.
The big headlights and the big round thing in the back.
Yeah.
I can still see that flash card in my fucking mind's eye. By the way, if we're going by that kind of stuff, Space 1999.
Yeah.
There's some revisionistic history.
Where a chunk of the moon just goes flying off into space. Only off by 20 years, 21 years.
Yeah, 21 years.
And once again, if Trump was president in 1999, that piece of the moon wanted to go.
Yeah.
We're out of here.
Just trying to get away. I love
said one.
Yeah, what do you got, Tommy?
I mean, I feel like we're headed towards Escape from New York on a national level.
Snipe Blitzen. I mean, you can never go wrong.
You heard wrong.
Yeah. I like the Temeraire series by... I can't remember her name. But anyway, it's a alternate history where there are dragons during the Napoleonic Wars. And depending on breed, they have different, you know, functions. So there are small, like, messenger dragons all the way up to huge dragons that are essentially the equivalent of modern bombers, where they strap gunners to the bottom and drop bombs. And one of the French captains happens to capture one of the English captains happens to catch a French ship on its way as a gift to Napoleon with a rare Chinese dragon. That has the breath weapon that's called the Breath of Wind. It has a sonic attack, and he names the dragon Temeraire after one of the great battleships, one of the great English ships. And it's very well. There's no other magic. There's no other lines crossed besides that there are dragons involved, and their breath weapons are chemical based. It's all organic and very, very biological. But there are dragons all the way up to, say, 80 tons, where they're, you know, 240, 260 feet long, down to small messenger dragons, just barely big enough for humans to ride. And it's a very well done series. I mean, as you, like any series, as you get later and later into the books, it starts to wind down a little bit, but she does a fantastic job of twisting history to the fact that there was air power during those wars. And as a pilot and someone who's always appreciated sort of the military history of aircraft, it was very interesting.
But okay, then. I think everyone's got to take a shot. Yeah, I'm not an alternate history guy. That's not one of my favorite genres to explore. As a historian, I'm always going, well, that didn't happen. But I did like Space 1991 in retrospect. And that brings us to plugs, guys. Who's got something fun to plug this week?
I'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing our geek rock music every week. You can check him out at kirbycracklemusic.com or go ahead and follow him over on Twitter or Facebook.
I'd like to plug geekorthodox.com.
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 Hello, Tammy.
Geekorthodox.com, purveyor of fine t-shirts and other geeky things such as stained glass prints, Johnny Skywalker rocks glasses, socks, baseball caps, stained glass prints, you name it, they got it.
Yeah, and Ian and Tammy will be traveling north soon enough in the next couple of weeks and staying with me at the house, and it's going to be fantastic. I get to see them again, like twice in 1 year. Fucking amazing.
Ah, lucky dog.
Three times you saw them at Dragon Con. Or not Dragon Con, Pensacon.
Pensacon, yeah.
Seems like forever that ago too. That
oh,
we
that's
saw.
That's right, yeah.
Seems like 2 years ago.
Oh, my God. Do you remember that time when we could fly places and not have to stay in a hotel for 14 days before we could leave our hotel?
Yeah.
The back long, in the long ago, time. The way, way back.
Oh, February. I hope you're relatively normal.
But you're not.
I'll second that, my brother. I have such a list of things to do. And I just added one. We got to go see Kirby Crackle.
Yeah.
Let's get together, guys. We're going to road trip. I don't care where they are. If they're in driving distance of any of us, they're in driving distance of all of us. We're going. Yet to hate, good year to die next year. Let's do this shit. I would say yes to so much. All right, let me plug my favorite game shop, Alvin Omega Game Shop in Quincy, Massachusetts. Great place. They haven't had any tournaments yet. That's not their level of comfort. So I'll also talk about Battleground Games over in Saugus. Their level of comfort's a little bit lower. They've allowed 8 people tournaments to go on in their shop. That only allows 10 people in the entire shop, and everyone wants to wear masks. That's about the level of my comfort right now, COVID. So I did play in a tournament, had a great time. So Battle Games and Alpha and Omega Games. If you got an itch to buy some plastic models and go to war with them, good places to be.
And if you're in the San Jose area, go ahead and check out Space Cats. It has a lot of good old comic books hanging up on the wall. And this past week, I picked up Showcase number 63, thereby completing my entire collection of every appearance of the Inferior Five.
Isn't it great when you can cross it off the list? That's why I shot low for my first one. I got every single one of Razorback, and I was like, woohoo, I feel accomplished.
Still, man, like it's still out there, but I'm working on it.
So just so you know, Mike, I have
one expensive one.
I have recently reinstituted my barrage of Stiltman requests to Max Dunbar.
Thank you.
I know I let him off the hook for a while for COVID, and then he posted something recently, and I was like, no, I will not stand for this. I will have Stiltman from you. So, just so you know, I'm back on the Max Dunbar wagon.
Gail Simone posted on Twitter asking what Marvel characters she would like to see me write. And I immediately tweeted her Stiltman, Lady Stiltman, and Batroc Zuliber. And
oh, thank you.
I should tweet out a Jack of Hearts.
No.
But you don't really like Jack of Hearts. You're a Trump supporter.
Oh, I love Jack of Hearts.
You don't give a fuck about Trump. You just like irritating me.
Oh, Jack is great.
Speaking of
Jack?
Twitter, we should also recommend, if you haven't, go ahead and follow at the Longbox Guys on Twitter, where Tom posts from his computer, apparently. He doesn't have it on his phone, which we found out today. Not good for our social media maven, which is explains a lot when we're at the cons and we're like, tweet something about the con, and you're like, I will in two weeks when I get home.
I should have stated I also have it on my phone, and when we're at cons, I do tweet. You can go back and see them. But day-to-day life where I'm here in COVID, I almost only do it on the computer because I'm getting old and the computer is so much bigger. The phone is so small. It's so small.
Get rid of the pager and get a smartphone.
It's smaller every... I have a smartphone. It's way smarter than me. It's not working very well. And that'll do it for us at the Longbox Guys. Mikey, what is this show like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
Tommy, sweet, sweet Tommy, any last words for us?
Kentucky. Now is a fantastic time to get rid of Mitch McConnell.
Ditch the Mitch. Josh! Sweet Josh. When the Ian's come, local pubs and breweries going to be your sector?
Yeah, and V-Day in 1918, also my sector.
V-Day in 1918. Oh, yeah, I remember V-Day. Yeah. I remember the cover. The cover really shines out at you. I remember that really good. Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Love you.
Oh, don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what James, just promote what you love. Love you. Yeah. Bye-bye.
We are not doing laser beams.
Oh, we are doing laser beams. I am not.
God damn it, Mike. I had beams. Everyone. Nobody was going to object to a whole podcast about laser beams, and you fucking.
We're
going to
argue about who is the best laser or beam character in Marvel, DC, or other.
No.
Some of you guys are going to say Cyclops. You're wrong. You're wrong. A couple of you guys are going to say Havoc. One of you assholes is going to say Jack of Hearts. Fuck you.
Yeah, we're not doing that.